It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
How's the humidity with you, Phil?
Yeah, she's pretty warm, and tomorrow I'm going to be out in it all day at different Waitangi events. So, first of all, down south in Manukau, then out the west at Waipereira, and then finally at Okahu Bay with Ngāti Whātua. So, yeah, and they kind of, you have to dress up for those.
Oh, yeah,
sometimes.
You do. Trousers, yeah. Full-length trousers, too, if you're on the bye-bye, mate.
Hey, it's all right if you're in jandals and shorts, or if you can duck into the tide, which I did last Sunday. Yeah, that feels good. That's what swimming's about, hey? When it's hot like this, you just jump in the tide.
This is the perfect opportunity to really take advantage of this beautiful coastal city that we live in. Phil, I mean, the focus tomorrow will be at Waitangi, I guess. But we are celebrating the nation, and we're celebrating each other. And as you say, there are a lot of events going on in Auckland. Do you think Auckland does a good Waitangi?
Yeah, I think I generally I've got the three, and sometimes they clash, and you're struggling to get to all of them. The Hayman Park one in Manukau, there's always a big turnout there. People enjoy
all welcome,
the
all welcome.
Everybody welcome, and it's absolutely free. Hauani Waititi Marae, that's good. And Okahu Bay, well, it's always great to be down at Okahu Bay, and Ngāti Whātua are always very welcoming to people down there. So, yeah, if you can get along to any of those events and share in the celebration of 179 years of modern nationhood, go out and do it.
What does it mean? What does it mean? You've attended these things, I guess, casually, but officially and the many different with many different sort of and the many different guises. What does Waitangi Day mean to you?
Well, I think it is a celebration of the partnership and nationhood of New Zealand, and it's a mixture of things. It's an occasion for protest, as people for many years and quite reasonably said, hey, these were the promises made under the treaty, but they haven't been honoured, and I think, to some degree, we've moved on from that with the Waitangi settlements and the greater respect that is shown today to where our nation came from to begin with, and the partnership between the Crown and Māori. So, I think it's a chance to go out and say, hey, actually, we're bloody lucky to live in this country. Look at other places around the world, and the conflict, the disagreement, the bound between people of different ethnicities and different faiths. And by and large, while we don't get it perfect in New Zealand, we've done better than most in terms of creating a stable and a peaceful country where there is mutual respect. Now, that doesn't apply universally. There are streams of racist views out there. I copped a fair bit of that at the time. We had these guys coming over from Canada to tell us that we were wrong about multiculturalism, and it wasn't a good idea to actually be tolerant of different ethnicities.
Turns out the thing is, it doesn't matter what they say, they're wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of look around. It's the same with all of our families. Now, there aren't many families in New Zealand where you don't have in-laws or descents or grandchildren come from a variety of different ethnicities.
Especially in this town. Especially in your town.
Yeah, 40% of Auckland are born overseas. And yet we can still come together. On the 14th of February, we'll have the Lantern Festival, and we're expecting probably about 220,000 people to turn up. And when you go to the Lantern Festival, you see people coming right from across the community.
Oh, the glee as they leave. That's what I've seen before.
They enjoy it. And it's,
cool rooms and stuff.
Yeah, I've just been doing some of the Chinese New Year stuff, and I went to an acrobatic show, Year of the Pig, yeah.
I thought you were going to say an acrobatic class. I thought you were branching out. There's tons on, isn't there? There's tons on, but we can't talk about just positive things in our little this morning.
And that's why debate and and working through how we can make our country better is always part of the day. So it's not, you're not just going out there, hand on heart, never criticise anything happening in your own. What I'm saying to people is, let's look critically at ourselves, but actually let's celebrate also what we've got right and what we've done well, because it's worth celebrating.
So let's maybe, can we do that without going anywhere near the kauri trees, please? Because on Boxing Day, after a $3,000 Auckland Council upgrade, the PHAS Kitty Kitty Falls track was ruined.
Yep.
To make it as safe as possible for the many beautiful kauri tree that line that yep. path up there. But people are still sort of buggering around on the trip. People just, I mean, how stupid are people?
Well, I was up there last Friday because I hadn't been on the track since it was reopened.
The question was, how stupid are people, though?
Yeah. Some people are pretty bloody stupid, and that applies in a whole lot of different areas. But by and large, you know, to get onto the Kitty Kitty Fall tracks now, you have to go through the boot cleaner. You know, you can't walk around it like I've seen in other places, and it's there, and the spray is automatic when you stand on the pad. You scrub your boots. The track has been rebuilt so that it's dry and it's metalled, or it's a boardwalk and it's not likely to convey mud, and therefore not likely to convey the dieback disease. And all of our expert opinion is that track now makes it safe not to spread kauri dieback, but still to enjoy the beauty of the Waitakere's, and in particular the Kitty Kitty Falls.
And if people just need to just be aware that you've put a bit of effort into it, so don't just hop across, take a shortcut, and just stick on that beautifully new refurbished track.
Yeah, and they've got roped areas down the side where people might be tempted to go off, and they've blocked off side tracks. And look, you know, the rules are there for a good purpose. We're trying to make it possible for people to enjoy it, and at the same time we're trying to protect our magnificent and iconic kauri tree from the decimation of dieback disease. You know, when we did that study last year before, it showed in 5 years the number of trees infected had gone from 8% to 19%. And that was a wake-up call for us. And
it happened on this very show. Week by week we'd hear the escalation.
Yeah.
And, pull your socks up pretty quick.
Yeah, I think we're ahead of almost anybody else, including the Department of Conservation and what we put in place. And what we have put in place, thank you, Aucklanders, for agreeing to the environment targeted rate. We've lifted the amount of money to protect kauri tree from the dieback disease from $3 million to $100 million over that 10-year period. That is substantial, but it was important that we did it.
Yep. Hey, so the other thing, what you are doing is you're sort of apologising for contractors that are making a mess everywhere as well, and cracking the whip a wee bit on lazy and, I guess, sloppy workmanship.
I went out over the January period, and I went out to East Auckland, Flatbush actually, just to have a look at how building contractors and developers were handling their on-site development. And I've got to say it was pretty bloody shocking in a lot of cases.
Oh, they're under a lot of pressure though.
Yeah. And
Build that house.
Yeah, they are under pressure, but that doesn't mean to say that we want to end up with their aggregate, their concrete slurry, going down our stormwater system into our creeks and out into our harbours.
Right on.
And so we now have a system, and it's working really efficiently, where we go around, we issue an abatement notice if they've not got it right. They've got 7 days to fix it. If they don't fix it, there's a fine that can be up to $750 a day. And, you know, surprise, surprise, probably over a 20-day period, we get 100% compliance, but we've probably also issued more than $500,000 worth of fines for people that haven't taken the message from the first abatement notice that we give them. And, you know, they know what to do, and a lot of the building sites are pretty cruddy, you know, people throwing their cigarette packets and their drink cans.
Oh.
And plastic bags, and you know, it doesn't have to be like that. You can see a property where it's well managed, and you see a property where it's not being managed at all. And we're just saying to those that don't come up to standard, you know, we'll follow an educative approach first.
Tidy up, man.
And if you don't follow it, then comes the sanction. And you know, I'm really pleased that our compliance officers have just got the turnaround. Look, this isn't new. Actually, probably from the beginning of time in Auckland, when you were building on the building site, people were sloppy, and you know, they didn't care care that their stuff ran into the creeks. But hey, that was yesterday's world. We're looking at tomorrow's world. We want to protect our waterways and our water quality.
Which brings me to my next topic here. What did you think when you looked on your desk and there was the report by Local Government New Zealand showing how much infrastructure, including water and road infrastructure, buildings and facilities, would be exposed in Auckland if the sea level rose by 1.5 metres?
Yeah, to tell you the truth, I thought it was a bit light. I thought the cost of it would be even higher than that. And, you know, we've put money aside now for coastal management. We've put money aside for climate change.
$14 billion worth of council-owned assets across New Zealand. New Zealand. Could are at risk if a sea level rose by 1.5 metres?
Yeah. Well, 1.5 metres is a big lift, and that is a scenario that could well happen unless people like Trump pull their head out of the bloody sand and say, this is a real problem and we're going to act now. What really pisses
But we,
me off,
we have to be ready for the fact that he might not do, or they might, people like that no, might not do that, and it might happen.
So all of our counterparts in the States at the city government level, and I meet from time to time with Derek Garcetti, who's the mayor of Los Angeles, they're saying, well, Trump is Trump, and we're just going to work around him. Cities can play a role. That's why we're part of the C40 cities. That's why we're, you know, taking a lead from the C40 cities about how we can reduce our carbon emissions and slow down the global warming.
But you must have to sketch out at least some sort of plan or some sort of contingency if that does happen, and if it happens quickly as well, I suppose.
And we are doing that, and we're already seeing, you know, the extremes in weather variations now is clearly one of the symptoms of climate change. And, you know, you don't have to be a genius to look at Greenland and the Arctic Circle and Antarctica and see the ice melt and know that if that ice melt continues at the rate that it's projected to, we're in big trouble right across the world, because guess what? Most major cities are built on the seafront because they're built around ports.
Paint the picture for us, Phil. Paint the picture. We're like, what would we lose in Auckland straight away if it went up 1.5 metres today? What are we talking?
Well, you can just imagine. You look down there, and that brings the water up to the top of the wharves, doesn't it, for a start? And you go around places like Maraetai, to Kawakawa Bay, over on the shore, some of the low-lying areas in Orewa, you're going to see coastal erosion. You're going to see
more
flooding.
Going to be all up the tits, isn't it?
It costs in terms of our roads, our water infrastructure. You know, look, this is an environmental problem and a potential catastrophe, but secondly, it's a huge economic problem. The cost of having to adapt to climate change, if we don't reduce its impact, will be huge. Which is why, you know, we're saying to the rest of the world, we need to implement the Paris Agreement. We need to spend the money now, because if we don't spend the money now, we'll be spending the money, but much, much more of it later.
Were you frustrated to hear that that West Coast Council saying that they weren't prepared to really to sign off on everything yet because they weren't sure that climate change was created by human beings?
Yeah, well, I love the
West Coast. That must have been annoying as a fellow mayor.
But, you know, when you've got to stop avoiding facing up to the problem. You know, it's like putting a sticking plaster on a gaping wound. It might be easier than having stitches or getting surgery, but it ain't going to work, and the situation's going to get worse and worse. And we just need to move in. That's why, you know, we're talking about electric buses. That's why we're promoting the use of electric cars. That's why we're bringing in light rail, and we've electrified heavy rail. All of those changes, you know, 40% of our global emissions in Auckland are from transport. We've got to make those changes. That's why, you know, cycleways and walkways and even Lime scooters actually make sense in the end, because you can't keep burning the fossil fuels. We've got to look at electric. We're potentially looking at hydrogen. Ports of Auckland thinking of developing a hydrogen plant down on the wharf and running some of the trucks, and we'd look at running some of our buses on hydrogen. That's happening in other parts of the world. There are solutions there. You've just got to have the determination, the political will, and the political support to do it. And I think New Zealanders have changed their views. I can recall the time when John Key said he was, he wasn't sure about climate change. No leader of a major political party today would make a comment like that. So, views are changing. We are coming into the real world, but time is not on our side.
Phil, thanks for talking to us. Have a lovely Waitangi day.
Okay, mate.
Bye-bye.
You too, and to all your listeners. Okay, mate. See you. Catch up with you next week. Cheers.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.